You must have hit a nail or something on the wagon, his dad said. They went outside to check. As Tim suspected, there were no stray nails or anything that might have punctured his leg. Besides, his pants showed no mark where the wound was. If it had been a nail, his pants would have had a hole in them. Maybe a snake bit you, his dad said. The only snakes they had in that area were Wartham moccasins. Besides, the wound didn't look like a snake bite. It wasn't just two puncture wounds, portions of his skin and flesh were actually missing. They never did figure out what happened. Where was I for an hour when they couldn't find me? Tim wonders. I have no memory of leaving the wagon, but they couldn't find me for an hour, and they said I wasn't on the wagon. And the wagon was sitting right outside the front door. It was becoming increasingly difficult for him to pretend that his life was normal. Still, he managed to rationalize each incident. The time he woke up outside, he must have walked in his sleep, and never mind that he was locked out of a house behind a fence, and that there were no footprints. The time he was about to bale hay and his dad couldn't find him? Well, his dad must be crazy as all. Regarding the two holes in his leg, he couldn't explain them. But UFOs? Yeah, he had seen one, but the idea of having contact, it couldn't be. Yes, he had seen what appears to be grey ETs coming into his home, but he had never even heard of greys. I didn't know what was going on, Tim says. At that time, that wasn't mainstream stuff. I knew something weird was going on. Then, a few years later, more incidents occurred which proved to Tim that the aliens were very interested in him. Tim was 17 years old. It was a Friday afternoon, and he and his friends decided to go to the beach at Lake Arthur, where there was a small boating event. They had a few beers and watched the regatta. After a few hours, the crowd broke up and people were starting to go home. Tim was still lying on the beach, enjoying the view of the ocean and all the pretty girls passing by. In the blink of an eye, Tim found himself waking up. He was no longer at the beach. He was now back in his bed at his cousin's house, where he had been staying. When he exited the bedroom, he received an incredible shock. It was now Sunday afternoon. He was missing an entire day. His friends were there at the house. My friends told me that they couldn't find me for a day. On Saturday night, they found me lying on a beach, and they couldn't wake me up. They brought me back to the hotel room. They thought I was drunk. When they got up Sunday morning, they still couldn't wake me up. So, they put me in a car, and they brought me back home. My cousins let me in the house, and they brought me and put me in my bed. And I woke up later that afternoon. Tim was mystified. Yes, he had been drinking, but he was not drunk. Furthermore, if he had passed out, why couldn't his friends find him? I would have been on the beach, he says. I mean, where did I go? It was around this time that he began having flashbacks and dreams of UFOs. I see them flying all around, Tim says. They converge together, and it's like they're playing tag or something. There are many of them. And at one point, it looks like they're even having a war, fighting against each other. He had a series of these dreams. Sometimes he chases after them. In a few of the dreams, he finds himself being pulled up inside the UFOs. It's always an exciting, thrilling, rush-filled experience. I don't wake up with fear, except for one time. One dream was particularly vivid. In the dream, he found himself flying in the air above his home in New Iberia. Looking down, he saw a strange creature on the ground. Suddenly, the creature started to float up toward him. Tim flew away, and rushed to the barn where he tried to hide. I'm hiding in the barn, he says, and I see this creature coming toward me. And I hear the door open, and I see this shadow coming in, and there's this bright light behind it. I could see it had long skinny legs and long skinny arms, and then I can see the rest of the body. And I see this little tiny creature standing there. It looks just like an alien, with big black eyes and a big head. And he lifts his hand and points at me. Tim instantly woke up. Around age 20, he had another alien dream. Only on this occasion, he had proof that it wasn't a dream at all. It was real. This was his one truly fearful experience. I had what I thought was a dream, where the aliens had taken me up into the spaceship, and they had restrained me on a table, and they left the room. I got loose. Somehow, they hadn't restrained me fully, and I got loose. And I got up and I started walking around. And when they noticed I was walking around, well, one of them came at me. And I punched him in the head. His head was soft, like a bean bag almost. When I punched him in the head, he went down. I think it killed him. Suddenly, I was fighting several of them. I was fighting them, and I was beating them, physically hitting them. I remember one of them jumping toward me, and he had like three or four fingers on each hand. I remember him jumping toward me. And then I remember seeing like seven or eight other ones right behind him, all coming at me at the same time. And I remember seeing his eyes, his big black eyes right in front of my face. And I remember going backwards, and that's the last thing I remember. When he woke up, Tim instantly remembered the dream. Then looking down at his arm, he saw that he was hurt. I had a cut on my arm, like a scratch or a scrape. It took a long time to heal, but it finally did heal up. He wanted to believe that he had hurt himself while sleeping, but he knew it couldn't be true. He couldn't have cut himself that badly. Following this incident, he began to have other flashbacks of his time on board the UFOs. One memory that kept surfacing was what the UFOs look like on the inside. I can tell you that the walls on the inside of this thing, from what I can recall, are absolutely smooth, like no texture to it whatsoever, like you were rubbing. Not even glass, it was smoother than glass. Not really shiny, just silvery metallic looking. It was absolutely smooth. There were no creases, no joints like you would see in a normal wall, like where the walls meet together. It seemed like it was all just one piece, like it was all one. Another strong memory that surfaced with vivid clarity was the waiting room. Well, I'll tell you, Tim says, it's really weird. This one thing on there that I remember was they had a room where they put you, and there were always several people in there. And it's funny, when you're there, you always know these people, humans. I don't recall any aliens being in that room. I have recollections of being in that room with several people that I knew very well. And it's a room where you can walk on the floor if you wanted to, or you can just float in the air. You can fly around. You can just float. It was like an anti-gravity room, but it wasn't, because if you wanted to walk on the floor, you could, just like you normally walked. But if you wanted to float in the air, you could. If you wanted to just fly across, you could. You could stop in the air, turn around, and fly back the other way. I think what they did is have like a waiting room, and they would put you in there, and it was just so weird and strange and fun, that you didn't think about being on a spaceship, or having aliens out there. You were just enjoying the fact that you could float and fly around. What they would do is put you in the while they were running tests on someone else. Tim remembers being in the waiting room multiple times. Each time, he recognizes the people, but afterward, amnesia kicks in. As soon as it's over, Tim says, you can't even remember these people's faces. Another strange and exciting memory that Tim recalled was being taken to the control room while the ETs are flying the craft. I'll tell you, it's really weird, he says. A bunch of UFOs dancing around the sky and playing tag. I mean, being inside the UFO when that was going on. I'm watching through the main view window as this was going on. There were two little aliens, little greys, sitting at the controls controlling this thing. And I understood what they were saying. I could understand, and to me it was like they were laughing, like they were playing a game. It was like a training exercise, but they were playing a game and having a good time. They were talking about that one over there and what that ship did, and what this one did over here, and what they needed to do to get it. It was like they were on teams and they were scoring points. The two aliens that were flying the ship at that time seemed like they were young and not very experienced, because they were debating over what maneuver to do, what sector to go into, how to come around on this side, whether to go up or down and around, or whether to go straight across and then come around on this side. The control room itself was a marvel of technology. Tim did his best to describe it. The main view window came up and back like it was on a slanted wall. It's not really a window, It's more like a projected screen on the wall that just pops up so they can see everything that's going on outside. They can put that view window on any part of the wall, and see through any portion of the wall. Or they could make the whole thing transparent, where you could see what was going on outside. At one point I remember I was on there, and we were out in space. We were moving away from the Earth, and I remember this thing going transparent. I was looking down, and it was like there was nothing under my feet. I felt like I was being hung by a thread and just hanging there, and I was out in the middle of space. I remember I started hyperventilating, just freaking out. The control room itself was not very large. It was hard to tell because the walls would often become transparent. I could see the control panel, Tim says, and the two seats and them sitting there. Now there was also this center portion. I'm trying to think of what they called it on the ship. The control room? The pilot room? It's kind of a round room, and right in the center, there's a big column that's maybe 10 to 12 feet in diameter, and it's right in the center of that room. Now, whenever this thing goes transparent, that thing doesn't go transparent. It stays where you see it, but it's on the inside of the ship. Just the outer walls of the UFO went transparent. When it wasn't transparent, the interior of the control room was a metallic-looking gray color. Tim has several memories of being in the control room while the grays maneuvered the craft. I was always standing behind them. He says, kind of like I was standing at a station. Sometimes they would show me things to do. Now, I would never operate anything, they would just show me how it worked, or explain things to me. Now, ask me today, I can't tell you anything about it. Actually, I couldn't tell you anything about it, as soon as it was over. Tim's memories all seem to come from the missing time incidents when he was a young man. He's had a number of jobs. He was a sheriff's deputy, a security officer at a casino, a sports instructor, a water safety instructor and more. He got married and had kids. Except for his strange alien memories, he lives a normal life. There have been a few occasions when he's spotted a strange light hovering high in the sky, not moving away like the other stars. He does occasionally see the grays, but the missing time and alien dreams have mostly stopped. He still carries the memories, some of which continue to surface, particularly about the UFOs and how they fly. I don't know if you would call them memories, or ideas and thoughts about quantum physics and electromagnetic propulsion type things. I have no education or training in those types of fields. Yet I have an understanding about it that I can't explain, and I have ideas about it. I just recently found out that one of the pictures that I would constantly get in my head was a cylindrical-looking metal object with a bunch of holes drilled all over the place in it. In my mind, that is the outer core. The inner core is a solid rod of pure magnetism which floats in the center of this cylindrical metal object. And this thing spins extremely fast on the inside of a drum and produces enormous amounts of electricity. Tim is convinced these strange ideas are memories of his UFO experiences. I can't tell you when they showed me or how they explained it, he says. But I know I have these ideas in my head. And when I hear people talking about things, I think, no, that's wrong, that's not going to work, they got that wrong. Or I'm thinking, they're on the right track. He's had several other strange experiences. He's had a number of OBs, where he's flown around his neighborhood. Looking back, he could see a silver cord leading back to his body. On a few occasions, he and other family members have seen the apparition of a little girl in an old-time dress. Objects will sometimes move by themselves. Tim doesn't talk much about his experiences, not even among his family. And yet, he's okay with them. I'm pretty much to myself, he says. He is considering hypnosis, but as of yet has not pursued it. Chapter 14, Anne's Communion. While Anne Witherspoon had known for years that something very strange was going on in her life, she refused to think about it. As she says, I was deep in denial at that time. In mid-1988, at age 27, Anne's denial of her secret life was delivered a crushing blow. She and her new husband, Harry, were in a bookstore in St. Louis, Missouri. A book display caught her eye. Dozens of the same paperback book faced her, each portraying a striking image of a pale-skinned humanoid face with large, glistening almond eyes. The book's title was Communion. And did a double take. She turned to Harry and said, "That looks familiar." Harry looked at the book, and was also taken aback. "Yeah, it sure does." Anne didn't want to think about it, but the image of the face haunted her. It was supposed to be an alien, she knew, an extraterrestrial. Not only did it look familiar, she could remember seeing beings that looked almost exactly like that. Could she be an abductee? Around this time, stories of UFO abductions, and the UFO crash at Roswell, New Mexico were starting to bleed into the mainstream media. UFOs, she thought. She had seen a few of those. Maybe she was crazy. She didn't think so. She was a nurse. People relied on her. She knew she wasn't crazy. But in contact with aliens, she started to think of all the strange things in her life. The times she remembered short figures coming into her bedroom when she was 5 years old, the time a UFO landed near her home and she was approached by the figures that emerged from it, the strange missing time incident she had at age 13, the weird marks that appeared on her body. She tried not to think about these things, but the subject of UFOs kept coming up on TV. Her husband also admitted that he had strange memories. He said that as a child, he saw two glowing people at the foot of his bed. Anne became increasingly curious and concerned. What was happening? She asked her mother about it. Her mother was equally disturbed and had her own story to tell. As a child, she recalled a strange-looking little man coming up to her window and talking to her. She doesn't remember what the being looked like or what he said. She does remember running to tell her mother, Anne's grandmother, who told her, "Don't tell your dad." Anne's grandmother refused to discuss the subject, but Anne's mother had the impression that the subject was familiar to her. After researching the subject, Anne remembered the many times her mother would say, "If I didn't know better, I'd think I was pregnant." Following the sight of the gray alien on the cover of Communion, Anne's denial not only weakened, she started to have a flood of memories. Some came in the form of vivid dreams, others came in powerful flashbacks, some of which left her breathless with amazement. There were so many events that she had denied, or refused to think about, or had completely forgotten. Bit by bit, she began to piece her childhood together. As more memories surfaced, she decided to write them all down. I began to look into it, and well, it kind of snowballed from there. It was around this time that she began to make sense of her weird night episodes when she would wake up paralyzed, certain that somebody was in the room. Her experiences had never stopped, she realized. They had been going on all her life, and were still happening. Not only had she been abducted as a kid, it was still going on. It was when she began having fully conscious episodes that Anne finally accepted that she was a UFO abductee. Anne Witherspoon was only 4 years old when she had her first UFO experience. She lived in the small town of Potosi, about 65 miles south of St. Louis, Missouri, with her two parents. One summer evening in 1965, Anne was woken up in the middle of the night by a strange noise. Wearing only her nightie, she crept toward her door. "I could see this beautiful blue light from the kitchen," Anne says. "But as I got to my bedroom door, here comes these two little guys. One was coming from the kitchen. The other was coming from my parents' room. They were sort of pasty off-white. They did have big black eyes, but they were perfectly round, like teddy bear eyes. They looked like toys in a way. I liked that and thought that was pretty cool. I was not at all upset to see them. In fact, I was thrilled, I was absolutely delighted. Because that meant if they were in the house, it was time to play and have fun. Who cares what time of night it was? Who cared what they looked like, or how they got in the house? None of this was important to me." Anne remembers playing with the ETs. At one point, she wanted to see her mum, who she believed was in the kitchen where the blue light was. One of the Greys told her telepathically, "Go into the living room and wait for your mum." They were very nice about it, Anne says. They didn't try to restrain me. She did what they said, and waited for her mum. This sort of incident happened several times, and Anne always looked forward to the impromptu play sessions. It must have happened prior to this occasion, because she remembers being excited to see them. And it would happen again. She remembers one incident. I woke up late at night, and a female Grey was sitting at a small desk in my room, talking to me, speaking softly and calmly, although not with her mouth. There were several others to her right. They appeared to be huddling together, and seemed interested in the wall behind them. To the best of my recall, they disappeared through the back wall. On one occasion, also in the summer of 1965, something much stranger happened. Anne woke up to find herself walking down the sidewalk near her home with a tall Grey. "He's holding my left hand in his right hand," Anne says, "and he's walking me along with bare feet on the sidewalk. And he stops catty-corner across the street from our house. Then he bends down, puts his hands on his thighs, and he said, 'Your turn is over. You can go home now.' 'Okay,' Anne said." The tall Grey began to walk away, and Anne walked back to her house, almost. Instead of just going into the house, she says, "I turned around to see where he went. Well, he disappeared at the end of the street. I could see this really bright light. It was low to the ground. It may have even been on the ground. You couldn't see anything in the light. But further away, I could see this long line of people standing there, mostly kids in PJs, but a few adults too. Anne estimates there were at least 20 kids. She didn't recognize any of them. They were just standing there," she says. "A few adults were with them." She still remembers one man vividly. He appeared to be about 30 years old. He wore a faded yellow bathrobe. Anne turned away and entered into her house. She doesn't remember anything after that. However, she does believe that she may have been taken on board a UFO. She has a memory of being on board a craft. She was about 5 or 6 years old. She was sitting in a craft. "I was in a room," she says. "The walls are kind of dull off-white. Lights were coming from somewhere, but you can't really tell from where. And there was a group of the smaller Greys by the door. There was a box on the floor and they were looking at it. It wasn't open or anything. I don't know what they were doing." Anne's attention was drawn to the porthole in front of her. To her shock, she saw that they were underwater. "I'm pretty sure we were underwater," she says. "The porthole was rectangular. I was looking out. You can't really see much because it's pretty dark, but there was a glow coming from the vehicle we were in. And this thing goes by, and it sort of looks like a submarine. It's got that sort of oblong shape, with a little nose in front of it. It was going the opposite direction we were. I didn't see any windows or anything, but it had the same kind of glow. On the bottom of the craft was a strange propulsion device. It was fascinating to watch," Anne says, "for whatever length of time it took this thing to go by. Anne couldn't remember anything else. But there was another incident from that time that she always remembered, but never understood. I was in the backyard playing," says Anne, "and these two little men came up to me from the backyard of one of the other houses. They had on whitish one-piece suits, like astronauts, but no insignia. They weren't wearing any gloves or helmets. They did look almost Italian. They had lots of thick, jet black hair, puffed up in front and slicked straight in the back. They looked like they had adult heads on child-sized bodies. They were fat and pudgy and they had bushy black eyebrows, long straight noses, and these big enormous smiles. They just smiled and smiled, and they seemed so sweet. But they didn't say anything, and they didn't communicate telepathically. One little man was further away, and the other one was nearer to me. Suddenly, the man approached Anne, extended his hand, making a peace sign type gesture with his fingers. Anne returned the gesture, touching the being's fingertips with her own fingertips. Then suddenly she heard a whirring sound behind her. She spun around and was shocked to see what appeared to be a spaceship landed in the backyard. "I would say it was about 10 feet wide," Anne says, "hexagonal, flat on the top, tapering sides. The middle part was the widest. And it was just a very pale yellow. I didn't see any windows, just this scalloping on the bottom half." The memory ended there, but soon more memories were forthcoming. Anne traced another powerful flashback of being on board a UFO to 1969, when she was about 8 years old. This man, a gray, was with me, Anne says. He had an angular face. We were sitting in there by ourselves. They have these little benches. They're not very comfortable, they are very low to the ground and not very wide, maybe 5 inches wide at the most, not for people like us. There's light in the room, but you can't really tell where it's coming from. There was a control panel, or a monitor panel. It was kind of angled, like an artist table. There wasn't much on there. The only thing I could see was a circular piece maybe 8 inches in diameter. On top of the circle was a little oval mark. Anne was wondering what the oval mark meant when the gray said, "When this gets to a certain place, we're home, where we want to be, at our destination." "Oh," she told him. She began to feel sleepy. "Lay down and put your head on my lap," the gray said. "And that's what I did," Anne says. "I remember him stroking my hair as I fell asleep." Anne's not sure how she was taken, but she admits that she had a very close-up UFO sighting around that same time. It was a warm summer evening in 1969. She was playing with her friend, Del, pseudonym, and two other kids. At about treetop level, out of nowhere, Anne says, comes this flat orange disc or tube-shaped thing. We're thinking, what the heck is this? We all stop. We all get quiet. We're looking at it. I don't see any windows. The object hung there for about a minute, then suddenly moved backward, exactly in the manner it had arrived. After it moved off over the trees, one of the children ran after it. He returned shortly later and said he saw no sign of the craft. That's something I've always remembered, Anne says. And the really odd thing about it was, it came straight up to us and went straight back. We don't have anything that can do that. The next major encounter that she spontaneously recalled occurred when she was about 10 years old, in 1971. She was on board a craft. She doesn't remember being taken or returned, just being there. She found herself surrounded by 5 or 6 grays, inside a strange dimly lit room. One side of the room was lined with a panel of large, curved windows. Anne could see the darkness of space outside. A gray stood in front of the windows, leaning over some type of control panel, and looking out. Anne had the impression that this was the control room. She saw no chairs or equipment, just the gray standing around. The room was fairly large, about 50 feet wide. The walls were white, says Anne. The floors were white. Everything was white. The ship was apparently moving, because suddenly the sun came into view. Anne was amazed. Although it was very bright, flaring and flickering, it didn't hurt her eyes. A gray stood next to her. "I'm guessing he was the one responsible for me," she says. She turned to the gray and asked, "Is that our son?" "No, it's not," the gray promptly replied. "Oh," Anne said. "I was just wondering because we're studying the sun now in school." The memory stops there. But there were many others. One evening, feeling frightened, she crawled into her mom's bed. At some point, she woke up and saw 4 or 5 grays standing in front of an oval-shaped hole in the bedroom wall. They went through one at a time, and then this hole in the wall just kind of disappeared. At age 13, in 1974, Anne reached puberty and began having regular menstrual cycles. It was around then that her experiences escalated. A lot of things happened around age 13, Anne says. She woke up one Saturday morning. It was 9 a.m., and her favorite cartoons were about to begin. She had her bowl of cereal ready and sat down to watch. At that time, she was alone in the house. Her parents had recently divorced, and her mother was at the bank where she worked. Suddenly Anne realized she couldn't hear the TV. She was about to get up and check it when she discovered she couldn't move. There was a strange sound of rushing wind. And then it was over. Anne felt strangely disoriented but otherwise fine. The TV was now working fine. Perhaps she had imagined the whole thing. Then she looked down at her cereal. It was a disgusting soggy mess. And looking at the television, her cartoon show was no longer playing. Somehow, she had missed almost all of it. Confused, she looked at the clock. It was 9:20 a.m. Somehow, there were 20 minutes that she couldn't remember. She ate her soggy cereal and wondered what happened. She had no idea how to explain it. It was just one of those things. I had no idea what had happened at that time. One day shortly after the cereal incident, Anne was riding her bike home from school.